Hi, I'm Gaines Taylor.
And I'm Brendan Bell.
And we are Refuge Radio. This is going to be our first episode where we kind of introduce ourselves. We're part of the Refuge Faith community, and this is going to be our podcast. It's really the community's podcast, and we're looking forward to sharing our stories today, but really sharing the stories of people throughout the world and their experiences with faith, with God, with the church and deconstruction, reconstruction, or maybe none of that, and wherever you are, or maybe you're upset or happy or in love, or I don't know. It's just all those good things.
Some things to know going forward with this podcast now and in the future. Our mindset is that we are all in this together. We're all going on a journey together. We want to be people that have open hearts, open minds to each other, and to your stories. And we hope that you have open hearts and open minds to our stories as well. We aren't perfect people. We have made mistakes. We will make mistakes. And nobody is perfect. And this is a place where there is grace and where there is love. And this is a place where we are all totally free to change our minds about anything that comes up, that kind of goes back to the idea of having open hearts and open minds.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think I agree with all those. I mean, obviously, we agree those. So we wrote those together. So I'm definitely on the same page with those. And I think it's important to also note that, like, when we're telling our stories, these are our versions of the story, like we're sharing today. So we're sharing from our viewpoint. There's always going to be multiple sides to each story, and this is ours. When you ask the other people on the other side, there is going to be slightly a different view on that. And sometimes it may not be a good view on the same. Sometimes you may be the instigator on the other person's view. So let's remember that too, because we are going to tell stories where, as people, we are usually the heroes of our own stories. So let's use grace as we move forward in all of these things. I'm like stuck on that too right now, because I just watched the Snyder Cut. And so, like, seeing views from different sides, like, I spent 4 hours of my life watching that. And I'm like, yeah, this is a better view, but it's also a lot longer view. And it's so much like monochrome and like more frowny. There's so much frowny faces. And I don't know. Did you watch that yet?
A lot more slow-mo as well.
Yes.
So much slow-mo. God
yes.
bless Zack Snyder.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I think halfway through it.
Yeah, I think the Snyder Cut, I am fine with this, like, derailing of the conversation right now. Because I think Snyder was writing his own gospel. And, like, yes. I mean, you had the apocalyptic look, you had creation, and you had everything in between. And so it's not a perfect metaphor, people, but like clearly like Joss Whedon did his thing and then all the fanboys were like, Snyder Cut, no, it doesn't exist, and now it's back. I actually didn't care for the longest time till I actually watched it. And yeah, different visions, that's the point. There will be like also on this podcast derailments because I do not think linear. Yeah, I don't know about you, Brendan, but
I know I do not. Okay. I am all about the derailments.
Yes. The one thing too that I appreciate, like me and you met like fairly recently, and
yes.
This is weird, but like we're the same age. A lot of people I know are a little younger, so my pop culture references usually go over their head, and like yep. I'm like, oh, I'm old, so we may have the same reference points, and then all true. Our listeners just may have no idea what we're talking about.
Yep. I bring up Punky Brewster and people's eyes glaze over. So,
Yeah, I've actually never seen that. I just know there's a remake. So.
Oh, there is a remake. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell me about your earliest memory growing up in church?
Yeah. So I actually remember when I was a little kid, I lived in St. Louis and bounced around as a kid a lot, school. My parents moved, and so I didn't move around as a child on my own. But I was very, and always have been, like kind of an explorer and stuff. So I don't remember in the church building, but I remember an after church picnic. And I got bored. So I left the picnic and went to the neighbor's house who didn't know me and like just was like, hey, what are y'all doing? Let me just like have lunch with you. And they were nice enough and luckily not creepy to say, you should go back to the church picnic. And so I did because I was a child and did not have choice. And so, but honestly, that's like my first memory, just being bored with a church picnic and leaving at like age 3, or maybe not 3, but probably like 5, and then coming back, being escorted back.
So your very first memory of church is that you wanted to already like get the fuck out of it.
My very first memory of church is leaving the church. So like my leaving the church at the earliest age, what about you? What's your early church experience?
You know, I don't really know. I remember, my first kiss was in a Sunday school class with a girl named Valerie. I really didn't have a strong impression of church growing up. It was always there. I didn't really have strong feelings about it either way. It was just like a thing that we did on Sunday morning. And then I remember being in like Royal Rangers.
What's Royal Rangers?
It's like a Boy Scouts kind of, except you don't do anything outdoors. You like just like learn Bible verses. Is my memory of it. I could be completely remembering this wrong. I just had this like cute little red vest and you'd like put like badges on it and stuff.
Yeah, I know Christian Service Brigade, which is like similar to Boy Scouts, but they had like blue uniforms. It reminded me of like United Nations, just the like blue, although I'm partially colorblind, so I could also be off on what color they were exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Church has definitely been like throughout my life growing up, one way or another. And just, I mean, you mentioned Orlando, going back to that, like we both were in Orlando at the same time as children. We didn't know each other, but it was just like this weird coincidence.
May or may not have gone to the same school.
Yes, yes. Probably I still have not, to pull though. Out the yearbook and like see. And I'll probably be, it's probably not the same school, but it would be weird if it was.
That would be so weird.
My first kiss was not, my first disappointment in probably discovering I was an Enneagram 4 was in Orlando when I asked a girl to like be my Valentine or just on a date. And she said no. And I went to the bathroom and cried and locked myself in a stall. And friends had to come try to get me. And I was like, no, I will be lonely forever. And as like a first grader. And so eventually a teacher had to come like talk me out of the situation. And but then I ended up discovering I was gay, and so it didn't really matter. I mean the whole lonely thing hasn't changed too much, but as you grew up, because you've grown up in an evangelical church as well, like what impacts, like what's that kind of narrative been?
I was kind of like a casual churchgoer most of my life. My sister really got into church in the sense that she made some really strong friends and connections in church. And as a result, she eventually convinced me as a, I'm going to say junior in high school, to join Bible quizzing.
Okay.
Which I don't know, this might be a Midwest thing. Michigan, everybody. But it's like, there's like quiz bowl in school and you've got like those little hand buzzers, you press the button and like a light comes on. This is Bible quizzing, you have like benches that you sit on. And then when they read a question, you like jump from the bench and the first person up, like, we literally had to finish the question that they were asking, like, and then answer the question if we jumped before they're finished. But it's a very interesting subculture that I could go into more detail at another time. But she was basically like, you should join this Bible quizzing thing. And as like a very like bookish person, I was like, sure. And so that was, I was kind of like a socially awkward, lonely sort of kid. And so that and marching band really were like my ways where I started to feel like connected with other people. And I would say, especially with Bible quizzing, that's when I really started to make real like intimate, vulnerable friendships with others. And I remember that summer of my junior year, I went to my church camp. It was the first time I went and I like stayed. It's like a week-long thing, like 100, maybe thousands, I don't know, probably thousands of people are there. And they're all in their little campers, tents, and there's even some cabins that people own on this campsite. And you just go out for like the whole week. And it was the first time I stayed like the whole time. I remember one of the youth services in one of the mornings, the speaker was talking about surrendering your whole life to God. And I had never really heard that before as like a thing you needed to do. I don't even really know how to explain what I thought about Christianity or religion or spirituality before that moment. I just knew in that moment something about what he said was true and I needed to do it. And I did. And I went to the altar and I feel like ever since that day, like my life has not been the same. And I would say in a lot of good ways and in some negative ways as well. But I definitely had what you would call like a conversion experience at that altar that day.
Yeah, no, I get that. Like, it's the, evangelical conversion. I mean, I was the same way. Like, I think at a younger age, though, my family originally was Southern Baptist. All my family is from the South. I'm not, but that's where it comes from. And so, like, church was every day. And then, like, my conversion quotes, I'm doing air quotes, everyone, was like younger. But then I consider it like more of a journey, because I feel like I had a second one of those when I was a junior in high school, through like a longer story. Basically, like, a lot of shit went down in my life, like freshman through sophomore year, and like some people passed away, and like, you know, a lot of non-fun things that happened. Like my epilepsy kind of took root again, and so there was a bunch of things that were like, oh, God's like just pissed at me, and like made me question never his existence. But like I was angry for a while, but then it was like this moment of redemption at a summer camp, and through a camp counselor who kind of like talked me through things. And so I don't know, like, there's something to be said. I used to be very much, oh, there's points, and I'm not sure I feel that way anymore. But like, I think it's more of a journey now. And so I don't know if it's like, oh, mountaintop, but like, I think for people it's different, you know, because I think those points were like key character development points. But also, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. Things are complicated. So yeah.
It's interesting that you say that. I'm studying social work right now, hoping to be a therapist at some point. And I'm in a class on spirituality. One of our assignments that we did is we map out our lives through spiritual experience, or we call it a spiritual life map. So we look at the experiences we've had in our lives and interpret them through spiritual highs and lows. What's interesting is any sort of spiritual mountaintop experience in all maps, like when we looked through them in groups, they were always preceded by some huge loss or some huge moment of suffering. It's interesting to me, and it was interesting to all of us, that it's like, it's almost like suffering and pain are like this crucible that creates new life and new spiritual growth inside of us.
Yeah. That definitely makes sense. The comedian, although I consider most comedians philosophers or theologians, depending, Marc Maron is one of my favorite. I don't know if you know who that is. If you don't, go listen to a bunch of his stuff. He's like, when people go through trauma and end up like in either, this is a terrible misquote of him, but like they end up in like a metaphorical or like literal puddle of their own like piss, like they'll either go to Jesus or they become like a yoga instructor. And so it's just like, how do I want to help people, or how do I want to, you know, do this? So, and it's just like, yeah, there is something to that. And I don't know the psychology. I'm sure you're learning a lot more than me, because I'm not studying it. It is interesting. Just why do we do that?
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah. So for you, when you had this experience at your church camp, what were some of the changes you noticed in your life after that?
Yeah. So I'm laughing, because I'm like, I'm not sure they're entirely healthy. So I think how I handle things in life, and I'm trying to improve, I handle things like a pendulum. So things were really negative and going bad, and like anti-spiritual, if you want to call them. I mean, not quite, because I'm a very like emotional person, which lends into spirituality a bit. And so not saying emotional people have to be spiritual, but that's where I was at. And so when this like positive thing happened, I was offered the opportunity to go to a Christian high school. So I went from like hating God, angry at God, all the way to like, I'm going to go to this Christian high school that's like conservative and like all these things. And then that led to going to a Christian university that was super, super conservative. And like, you know, so it was like one swing, let's go from one extreme to the other. And looking back, that's not healthy, because you don't have that middle ground. And I've done that a few times in life. And so while there was good that came out of that, without any guidance, without any like, just making that decision on my own wasn't the best. But there was good that came out of it, like having people around you that were supportive and, you know, things like that. It was a mix. It started me being in that conservative environment, set me on the route to deconstruction, because of like, not so much at the high school, but going to Liberty. I'm not going to name a lot of locations, but I am fine with hitting on Liberty, because they can take it. They have millions and millions of dollars. A lot of the other places I'm not going to name, because I don't think it's as fair, but Liberty can take it.
Yeah, no, they absolutely can take it.
Yeah, they are the... No, not going to make that comparison. So anyway, it's going to say something, then I'm like, okay, maybe that's too far. So they are the ones that were like, this is the way theologically, there's no other way. And it's like, I don't know about that. So it was swinging that far was good, because then I could see the like cracks in the armor of like super conservative. And I don't know if that's the right analogy, but yeah.
So would you say were you like in the evangelical culture, but always felt like you kind of had one foot outside of it? Or what did that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely growing up, like there was always something off, like being in the closet, being gay, being in the closet at a conservative church, growing up, there was an aspect of don't ask, don't tell, don't talk about things. And like very much just a lot of weird things at that church, like not really, really weird, but things you'll hear pattern wise over time. Like, we have to have faith, you know, but also works are important, and let's win souls. But it's like, well, the Holy Spirit is who does the action, not people. And it's like, material doesn't matter, but let's like stack up our rewards and treasure in heaven. It's like, I thought you just said like material things don't matter, but you're trying to like rack up treasure in heaven, like, so you're still stuck on material. A lot of mix of patriotism and religion at this church. The culture actually kind of got worse when some new leadership came in. A phrase that was mentioned every Sunday to the level of indoctrination. This phrase was used: we're a Bible believing church. Like, we teach the Bible here. We're a Bible believing church. And that like bothered me so much. The fact it's like, okay, that's fine. But by repeating that, you're implying, first of all, you're weaponizing the Bible, and the fact you're implying that all the churches out there do not teach the Bible and do not believe the Bible, and that you have to come here to learn the Bible. And that's problematic for like a lot of reasons. And there was scare tactics. A lot of there's a big Catholic population around here. And a lot of like, the Catholics are wrong. And here's why they're wrong. And the knowledge that the people in the church have about Catholics, the leadership, is incorrect. I don't know a ton about Catholicism. I'm not going to lie. But whenever I've had a conversation with Catholics and like brought some of these up, like just in question form, they're like, no, that's not right. I had a someone who was Catholic in one of my classes, and they called out the professor on like the views of what they thought Catholic theology was like. And the professor kind of like backed down, and he like tried to like walk back his answer, and the student just had him in a corner. And I don't mean that in like a combative sense, but they were just standing up for themselves. And it's like good for them. So yeah, there's a lot of things that we're just like starting to like piece together of like, why this? Why this? Why do we do this? This doesn't seem right. What about you? Like, what was your experience?
That's a good question. So for me, as I stated, I was like a very lonely kid. And so for me, being a part of the church was like, I found a place to belong. And so if I'm going to belong, I'm going to belong hard. So I'm going to belong all the way. And so I became pretty zealous, pretty homophobic, ironically, but also unironically, or very classic, I guess you could say. I'm laughing, but it's terrible. I would get into arguments with people in class about gay rights, about all sorts of conservative talking points. I just kind of eased right into all of that Christian nationalism culture. I think looking back, I mean, I would not have been able to explain this to you as a 17-year-old kid, but looking back, it was like, I found a place where I belong and I am not gonna risk losing that. So I am still hard in the closet. I have hardly come out to myself, let alone anybody else. It was a lot. I felt very safe and secure in my Christian identity. I felt like we were the good, we were the righteous, we had all the answers.
Yeah.
If everyone just believed like we believed, like this world would be a better place. Like I like believed that because I needed to believe that. And it wasn't until I did a very similar thing. I went to a Christian college and studied ministry. So it wasn't until I really started studying the Bible for myself in that context of like a scholarly perspective that I started really being confronted with what is really going on in the Bible. I remember one of the first things that really shook my worldview was that Jesus was probably a pacifist and he was nonviolent. And it really shook me as a 20-year-old kid at the time that I was like, well, then why do we support war? Mm-hmm. Like, it was a lot for me because I was trying to grapple with this political ideology that evangelicalism had married itself to and what I was literally reading in the Bible. And I'm like, I don't see how these things go together. And at the time I was just very sincerely like confused. I'm like, I don't get it. Like this nationalism is what we're preaching, but the Bible is preaching something different. I remember just that whole experience of studying the Bible, it was like a second awakening for me, where I felt like I saw the character and nature of this God that was so much richer than the God I was introduced to, even at the start of my journey. And at the same time, it was the God I felt, or whatever, the divine, whatever you want to call it, that I felt calling me in the first place. And it was like, I just was starting the journey of like brushing away the junk that was kind of surrounding it. I think for me, that was the first crack in my worldview of something is not right in evangelicalism. And I'm gonna move forward and try to see more clearly what that is.
I lived in Colorado for a short period of time. And when I moved back home, I went to the church I grew up in for about 2 years. And then that was enough for me. I had this roommate that I sublet from, who I met on Craigslist, which is always, you never know. But it was this real awesome guy. And he like grew up in Palestine. He was Muslim. And so it was the complete opposite view of everything in a conservative church you're taught. Like, those people are the enemy. I use that phrase, not believing that. I'm using that phrase, those people, as what you're, you know, quoted, what people tell you, not what I believe. So just want to clarify that over here. He was one of the best roommates I've ever had. We had these awesome discussions, but people at the church, when I had told them like who I was rooming with, there was like this staring at me. It's like, why would you? It was just the most racist thing, like that. It's like, why would you room with a Muslim who's from Palestine? And it's like, why would you have this attitude towards that? Like, the stories he would share with me, you know, because evangelical Christianity is so much, we will support Israel. We will support Israel. We will give them missiles. We will let them do whatever the hell they want to do. It's like, yeah, but you don't hear both sides of the story. He has to go, when he lived there, in order to like drive what would be like, let's say 30 minutes to the airport for us, would take like 6 hours to go through checkpoints for sometimes.
Wow.
One story told me there was some suicide bomber took out, and it wasn't even confirmed that it was a Palestinian, took out something in Israel. So to retaliate, the Israelis sent an attack helicopter and shot up an entire block in Palestine.
My gosh.
Yeah. So it's like, we don't hear, you know, it's so like this zealous attitude. We don't think sometimes, I'm using general, we don't think, you know, and it's like, when I start hearing these stories of like firsthand accounts, it's like, why do we not hear this growing up? Why do we not hear, you know, both sides to the story? That it's like, you don't hear about the block in a city getting shot up and that possibility. And these are human, and it's affecting people I'm rooming with, you know, they're people too. It's not a concept, but the church makes it a concept. It's like, they make it the other, you know?
Yep.
And that's been a constant struggle for that. That's not a recent thing. That's, you know, been around for thousands of years. Yeah. Fun. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
So
just
fun.
Just some, we're hitting some light stuff in this first episode here.
Super light.
Yeah.
Super
yeah.
Light. Gaines, what was the culture surrounding gay people like growing up for you?
Yeah.
In church.
Yeah. We didn't talk about, like, it was kind of like conceptual, a lot of stuff. Like, things got brought up, like, this is a sin, you know, Romans 2, all that good stuff, Sodom and Gomorrah, wrong interpretations of Sodom and Gomorrah.
And of Romans 2.
And of Romans 2. Yeah, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
In reality.
No, you're right. You're right. Very much correct. And so it's a traditional conservative thing. This is wrong. We're not going to give you a really good reason why. I slowly came out to a few people that I would trust. I had the armor up really strong, and I came out to a few people in high school. I came out to one youth leader who stopped helping with the youth group a month later. So it's like, not because of that. Now, in my mind, as a high schooler, it was because of that.
Right,
and I was
just
like, abandonment. But our church, like, was pretty, and these aren't my stories to tell, so I'm not going to get into them, but it was pretty like, if something happened in the church, it was like church discipline. It's like, you did this, you're gone. You know, with like infidelity and things like that. So it's like, I had heard about conversion therapy. I had seen those things. That's like, and then the other aspect was, I didn't want to be the token gay at church who everyone was working on fixing. So between those things, it's like, I'm not going to come out, you know, cause I don't want to be sent to conversion therapy. I don't want to be an outcast. And I, more than anything, I really didn't want to be like the project prayed about every week. I didn't want to be like, yeah, I didn't want to be the token gay. And I don't mean that in an offensive way. It's just like, there's those people in churches who it's like, oh, that person at conservative churches, that person is addicted to meth. And like, so they need to be healed and we're going to make all our efforts on them. It's like, that's not right. That's not right. They're a human, they're a person. Right. And like, and that's all they are. Like there's nothing more than that. They're, you know, and like the people saying this are like pastors who are eating too much. Like, and so, you know, it's like, I don't know. Yeah. So that was probably my biggest fear. Just like being like the center of attention over that. I don't mind being the center of attention, but not over, not over that.
Right.
Now, like you said, you know, how you just wanted to like fit in and belong. So you like, hopefully, you know, more or less, drank the Kool-Aid, if you will. Like, cause yeah. I definitely much have done that at certain times. So how did that work for you? Was there any ever like debate, like, should I come out? Or do I come out or do I just keep going on this path?
Oh no. Yeah. I drank the Kool-Aid. Like I drank all the Kool-Aid. I was all in. There was never a debate in me of whether I should come out in the traditional sense, as in I am gay. That is part of who I am. And I need to accept that. And I did reach a point in my early 20s where I decided I need to tell my friends that I am, how I phrased it at the time. And I think how a lot of people like James Dobson or those types would say, I'm same-sex attracted. Mm-hmm. So that we weren't claiming gayness or queerness as our identity. I'm doing air quotes, everyone. but we recognize there is something going on inside of us. And so it was kind of like I half came out because it's like I opened up and let people into my world, but my world was, but I'm not gay because that's a choice that you make. I'm doing air quotes again, everyone. I very much believed so strongly that being gay was a sin issue. Like I believed that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believed God was going to heal me, quote unquote.
Yes.
And so I held on to that for years. And I tried everything. I had people pray over me, people pray in tongues. I obviously prayed a lot. Me and some friends, we like tried starting like a support group at my Christian college. And then I eventually decided to try conversion therapy. So I did like I would characterize as conversion therapy light, in the sense that no one assaulted me physically or abused me verbally.
Yeah.
But it was still very much, let's sit around in a circle and figure out how we cannot be gay anymore. I remember going in to that experience. It was a 3-month program, and it was like every Tuesday night in this random church basement. I remember it just felt heavy to be there. And I was so confused by that because I was so excited for this, because I'm like, I'm finally going to figure this shit out. God is going to heal me. I'm going to marry a woman and live like a quote unquote normal Christian life.
Yeah.
And I won't have to worry about being rejected from this community that I feel like is the first community I've belonged in. It was just a very sad and depressing experience because the leaders who have been doing this program for years have not changed. Most of the people in the program had been through the program multiple times and had quote unquote relapsed, meaning they had some sort of relationship with a man, whether that was emotional or sexual or romantic. Every night I left that was another step closer to the realization that this isn't something that's going to change.
Yeah.
And I remember in the height of my zealousness, one of my professors at my Christian college, who I had opened up to about what was going on, he asked me a question, and he's like, "Brendan, what if this never goes away?" And I could not look at that question. I could not accept that question, because I needed that question to not exist, if that makes sense. I needed to be a solution. Because if I was gay, what did that mean? I would be exactly where I was before this whole experience, which is alone, you know?
Yeah. I didn't go to any conversion therapy meetings, but there's a Christian fellowship ministry for a bunch of the Pennsylvania schools. And like me and this one guy, started like having a very, he was part of the Christian fellowship as well. And I wasn't sure, kind of the same thing, like where I was still at this point of, what do I do with all this? You know, I was at this point of, do I want this to end or do I not? Like, and then me and this guy like kind of had a on off thing, and he was at the same point, like, what do we do now? More so, this needs to stop and I want this out of my life, I would say, more where you were in life. And I was not quite there, but I was meeting every week with the head of this ministry, and just like when this, like, it wasn't a relationship, it almost, it kind of, but not really, you know, it's complicated. Like, whatever you want to call it. Once again, if we're going back to our thing, how we started, my story is probably much different than his story. But anyway, when all that started, me and like the head of this ministry, like our conversations got a lot different. They got a lot more heated. Like I was really starting to question a lot more. Like, well, why the Bible this? Why this? Paul's kind of a dick. Why did Paul write this? Why did Paul write, you know, I was really pushing hard all these questions that I had like held back, and like, especially regarding homosexuality, it was like, people have always told me this is wrong. People have always said, I have to suppress this, but this feels right. Why does the love, why can, it always came down to, why can some people not love? You know, why is their love not okay? And like the answer that he said basically was like, well, it's not actual love, or the love is like, you know, it's misguided. And other people have told me that too. And it's like, no, that shit don't fly. Like, it's just, yeah. And it's just like, so I just, that was really, and there were a lot of contentious dinners at that point and of us meeting, and but they were good. I needed that. I needed those like heated discussions of all my years of living, of like being told this is wrong, this, you know, same-sex attraction, exactly what you were told, you know, and you can fix this and you can, you know, you can push this down, just push it in the, you know, like its little box and you can just, you know, put it, compartmentalize it and it'll go away and you can meet a nice young woman and have kids and everything's gonna be okay. And I'm hearing more and more stories and, you know, being given books and it's like, I don't know, like the books they're giving me are like, these look sad. Like these men are sad. Like I don't believe them. I don't buy this shit. Like, So I get like that. And it was just, the more people tried to convince me, the more holes in the argument I saw. I didn't have answers yet. And I don't think I still do, like, honestly, but I don't think I ever will. But like the more people came at me with this is the answer, the more I was like, no.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So was there a turning point for you? Tell me about like your current relationship with like church and church culture. Was there a turning point for you where you're not involved with church anymore? Or what does that look like for you now?
No, I'm definitely still involved with church. I think, honestly, the turning point in how I view church happened at Kutztown. And because like I was in a leadership position when all that went on, but this ministry was conservative. And when you're in leadership at a conservative thing and you're like hooking up with a guy, they're not fans of that. So, I was asked politely if I thought it would be a good idea for me to step down. And I strongly, or however, you know, nice how the Christianese way of doing things. So yeah. I did, but I was still graciously offered to be like a prayer group leader or whatever. But basically I did this Bible study on our hall and like, I kind of became like, me and my friend, the outcast prayer leader, like my friend was great. He's a saint and like no one has anything against him and he's a wonderful person. But the two of us, I don't know. I think it was because of me, but maybe I'm just being really, really self-obsessed right now. But like, we just did things differently. Like they gave us a curriculum and we're like, screw this. And so what we did is like, we were just there for people. I just said, we're not doing this curriculum. We're going to like reach out to the hall. We're going to like make cookies for people. We're going to like, we had people stop in. Our room where we met was across from the laundry room. So people would be like, what are you guys doing in here? And they'd stop in. Like people would just tell their story to us and stuff. And honestly, that was the earliest foundations of what we're trying to do here, and just like relationships matter. So that was like the early point where I'm like, oh, you know, traditions, all this, like this can be thrown out the window, like just like toss all that out. And that was kind of my big turning point of like, building's not needed, you know, like I don't need a not even I, but like there's no need for a service, there's no need for this, like it's about the people. And then I'm like, hey, that's what Jesus was doing. This isn't just me, like it's legit what Jesus was doing. So yeah, that would be my big turning point. What about you? Like what was like your turning point with everything?
That's a great question. There were so many turning points for me. It would be like, I'd have to write a book. But I'll just say, over the years, I started to see a lot of things and ask a lot of questions. And not just about the LGBTQ plus community, also how Christians present themselves in the world in general, and what we were doing in the world, and how I felt like so much of what we were doing and presenting were antithetical to what I was seeing in the New Testament. All of that was kind of building up. And as I was getting older, I had kind of reached a point with myself where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be single for the rest of my life. I'm going to be celibate. I'm going to be a monk, basically. But I'm going to have really good friends, and I'll get some emotional intimacy there, and that'll be good. And I'll be really happy, and I'll be content, and God will provide for me. After that conversion therapy experience, I really didn't think there was going to be any hope that I was going to, my feelings were going to change. It became very clear to me that whatever was going on, it was something that was unchanging. And trying to change it was just, I was just hurting myself. So 2016 happened, and I hit like an emotional breaking point. Mm-hmm. I just completely fell apart as a person. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And it was the first time ever in my life that I out loud said, I'm gay. And that's just who I am. And I remember one of my friends, I had a conversation with him about my same-sex attraction, quote unquote, at the time. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, he's like, Brendan, I don't think you've ever really allowed yourself to wonder, is there a biblical case for accepting this part of yourself? And I was like, my wall went up, and I'm like, no, like, of course not. Like, how dare you? And la, la, la. And after that emotional breaking point, I remember that conversation. And I was like, he's right. I never have. I've never given the other side its day in court in my heart and in my mind. And I'm like, you know what? I'm emotionally in a place where I'm open to that, because my heart was literally like ripped open. And so I'm like, let's do it. And I went in to, I read everything. I read so much shit. And I was processing it with fists in the air and being like, this doesn't make sense because blah, 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 blah. And I remember, shout out to Kathy Baldock. I love her. Her book changed my life, Walking the Bridges Canyon. I would highly recommend it. She put forward an argument, and I don't know if she was the first person to argue this point, but it was the first time I had read it, where she was talking about in the Gospel of Luke and in the context of how can you tell a false teacher from a good teacher? And Jesus answered, a good tree produces only good fruit, and a bad tree produces only bad fruit. And then the question that I felt God or the divine ask in my heart was, what has been the fruit of thinking being gay is a sin in your life? And I just broke down, because I was like, it has been nothing but negative. And then the question came forth, how can this then be a good teaching? And that, in that moment, I like, my spirit and everything shifted. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so true. And I then, and now I've reached a point where it's like, not only do I fully affirm that part of myself as not only good, but God-given, and I affirm that in others across the entire LGBTQ plus community, I also believe that what we have done as an evangelical, and largely even broader, of course, in the evangelical community, the religious community in general, that has had homophobic stances, what, and transphobic stances, let's be honest, have done to our community, I think that is something that needs to be repented of at this point. I think there are centuries of wrongs that have been done to our community out of ignorance, and out of a lack of understanding, never out of a place of understanding or love or kindness. So that was my turning point and kind of what led me on the path of finally coming out as gay. And understanding that has also kept me in the Christian community in a sense.
Yeah.
Because I do feel it was God that led me there, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. I'm just excited for where all this is going to go, because I can't wait to hear everyone's journey and just like where people have been taken in a positive way, not in a kidnapped way. But
like, exactly.
I realized like that just sounded like a Liam Neeson movie all of a sudden. But no. It's just so powerful to like hear all these different stories. And I think that's the importance too, because like yours is very unique than mine, but there's similarities that are so good to hear that are like, see, we're not alone. And I know I'm like plugging our own podcast to ourselves right now, but yeah.
Yes.
But I just like, yeah, I think it's important. Community is important.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so I'm excited about doing this. Next month, we will have a guest. The guest will be announced pretty soon. We're going to do these, release them the end of every month. That's the plan. And thanks for listening to Refuge Radio, and have a great day.
Listening to Refuge Radio with your hosts, Gaines Taylor and Brendan Bell. Audio production, editing, and music are done by me, Crystal Jeffers, with musical help from Lyndon Braun. Come find us on social media, on Instagram at refuge_faith_community, or on Twitter at refuge_faith.